Welcome to the second season of Operational Harmony, Balancing Business and Mental Well-Being, where we achieve goals without sacrificing peace. Our host, Nikki, is the owner and founder of Nikki's Office, where she specializes in social media management, business audits, and business coaching. Her journey through mental health and entrepreneurship not only brings awareness, but also equips her with valuable coping skills. This unique experience offers a fresh perspective on approaching challenges and innovating in different ways. Let's introduce our guest.
Hi, Nikki. It's great to be here. Thank you for inviting me. My name is Ashwin Gulati, and I'm the author of Soul Venture, A True Life and Death Journey into the Startup Culture. Just was published about a few weeks ago and has been doing quite well. And I think today what we're going to talk about is some of the things in the book and some of my experience in helping companies take off or land, and both the business side of it, the personal side of it, and a lot of things that people don't talk about.
Okay. I kind of want to start off by getting a background of you. So how long, when did you start your first startup? Like, how far back was that? How much experience do you have with them, kind of thing?
So yeah, I'm going to give you a little bit of a personal background because it dovetails into all of this. I was born in India, and I came to the US when I was in high school, 14 years old or 13 years old. And honestly, I went from a pretty stable environment to a pretty unstable environment. And I've actually been working, I would say, three jobs a day since I was 13 years old. And I've been very entrepreneurial. Like, even when I was here, I had to survive. So I was always doing projects. But then in college, I went to college, Claremont McKenna College. I don't know if you've heard of that. It's in Southern California. I also studied in London at the King's College and London School of Economics.
I have heard of that.
Yeah. And I studied business. At first, I thought in order to make money in America or be successful in America, you got to be in finance or in Wall Street or something. But I quickly realized that's not what I wanted to do. And so I moved to Europe and I got into software, and really not as a programmer, but more as a sales and business development. And that was kind of my day job. But even while I was doing my day jobs, I lived in England, I lived in Spain for over 6 years. I was always doing little companies on the side. I was like importing tennis goods to England. I started a little audio techs company in Spain, and none of it really worked out. It was really hard to do it in Europe. So I moved back to US in the late 90s. And that's when I actually started my first official company that required investment in the whole Silicon Valley game. And so I'd say the first one was 1997. And then I've done several companies, but I've also worked with a lot of entrepreneurs on their startups, because I work with incubators, accelerators. I've also worked with the SBA and helped them create a tech type of a startup division in California. And so I think I've been living in the trenches of startups for over 30 years. My companies, also other people's companies, and seen a lot of things in there. And it's kind of the basis of my book a little bit. It's not just a business book. In fact, that's the first line of the description of it. There's a lot of business in it, but it's really about sort of what the entrepreneurs are really going through mentally, physically, emotionally, and then what are some of the things that are kind of counterintuitive in the business world that people say you should do, but actually ends up backfiring. So I kind of put it all together in a kind of a memoir and a knowledge share mix, a hybrid book, I would say, and I think it's being received very well.
I have read some of it. I will read more of it. I have been having lately a dry spell with my reading, which is just my brain's fault. But it's very descriptive, and I can't say enjoyed reading it, because some of it is hard to read because it does get dark, but it's been a great read. I felt like I was there. And so that was...
I go back and forth really between the inner journey and the outer journey a lot. So there's a little bit of shift going on there. I know the book starts off a little heavy, but I think if you go along, you'll find it all makes sense as to why it's all intertwined.
So what made you decide to write a book? Because I was told by a therapist that I should write a book. And my dumb butt thought that a podcast would be so much easier. So
they probably are. And in fact, I actually think it took me so long to write this book, like over a decade, right? And people, as even you said, right, people don't read as much, you know, mm-hmm. and I think people's personalities are changing and time's changing. But I do think that writing a book is, it's probably the hardest thing I've done of all the things. It was very hard to publish this book. Now, if you read our book and you look at the story arc, I think it'll answer a question for you of why I wrote it. And the reality is this, it was not like one day I woke up and it was like, oh, I got a great business idea. I'm going to write a book. It was not like that. In fact, it's a very, very deep journey. And here, what if I told you that first company that I started was called Writer's Gems, okay? And so I've been thinking about writers and writing for like decades. And I've been writing in the closet for a long time. And I thought, well, you know, writers shouldn't publish until you're like famous or something like that. But I think that it's been written over a very long period of time. And it was not like I have an idea. It was something inside of me that honestly needed to be completed. And in fact, this is my second book. And the first book I was too scared to publish. I was very scared to publish this one, but I was more scared to publish the first one, which was too personal. But I did lift some sections and out of that one for this book. So I think I gotta tell you, hats off to anyone that after been through what I've been through, and I've talked to so many authors and it's all the same. You put yourself out there. I've been a really private person all my life. Really private person. No one knows what I do or how I do it. No website. And here I am, totally public, doing a podcast with you. And all these articles have been written about the book. And I have all these interviews. So it's a really weird feeling of exposing yourself and putting yourself out in the world. And I mean, honestly, people have this mask on mm-hmm. to survive in the world. You have your business mask on. And I, in this book, I take it off. So a lot of people close to me are kind of shocked. They're like, really? Did you really publish that? I don't know if I answered your question, but no, it was not like one book idea. It was just, it evolved over a very long period of time.
Okay. So tell me more about venture capitalism or startups. Talk to me about those things. Because me, I'm a small business owner mm-hmm. or a solopreneur or whatever you want to call me. Mm-hmm. I have no idea about startups. So can you explain? What is the startup process?
Well, actually, you are an entrepreneur and you are doing a startup. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I can't talk much about the venture capital world. Mm-hmm. I have experience in it, but I think the book is really more about the new businesses and mm-hmm. from the entrepreneur and investor standpoint, right? So I think it's a really glitzy world out there. People want to do startups. I'm an addict of it. I've been like that for a long time. And one of the problems and startups today is that it's so easy to start a startup. Mm-hmm. You know, it was not the same 20 years ago. And like right now, you could actually literally start a business, get it branded, get a product service out, go onto Google, get virtual assistants internationally. Literally, by the end of the week, you could click a button and you could have a business online, right? Mm-hmm. And that was not the case 20, 30 years ago. But the startups that I'm focused on, even though there's a section in the book, by the way, that almost says you should be a solopreneur, not an entrepreneur, because of how hard it is to be an entrepreneur. But what I'm focusing on are like some of those high stakes ones where people are like, hey, I'm going to change the world, or I got this best new idea that no one's done before, and I'm going to file a patent, and I'm going to be a billionaire and move out of my way. Those type of people, kind of the way I am or mostly was, that's the kind of startups I'm talking about, where what it takes to build a team, what it takes to really take money from entrepreneurs and friends and family and all the emotional stuff that goes along with it and how hard it is. There are some chapters in the book about how customers really think and how removed the customer really is from the entrepreneur's perspective, sometimes 9 to 10 times removed. How hard is it to get investment? And then it's kind of like a rat race that you're always behind in the business side. But what people don't talk about as much is kind of what's going on internally. There's a lot of personal and psychological strain that the founders go through. And I talk a lot about that as well. So do I say don't do a startup? Well, I tried to tell people not to do a startup. But if I said that, then we won't have iPhones and electric cars and new restaurants and things like that. So I don't really mean it, but I do mean it to think about it really, really hard as to why. Not the business why, but the personal why. And one thing I learned was, and this is, I think, funny, not funny, almost sad, actually, is that most people do it because they want freedom. maybe you did it because you want freedom. You don't want to work for somebody, or you don't want to work in a corporate 9-to-5 job, and you want to be free of your own and make money. So a lot of people say, I want to be my own boss. And then they go out and raise money from 20 investors and they have 20 bosses while they had one boss before, you know? So I think there's all this like push and pull going on. And so I write about that stuff, but you should definitely keep going on the book because I think the beginning is just the warm up.
Oh, yes. I'm going to finish the book. I am a big reader. Every once in a while, though, I go through a little spell where it takes a bit for me to finish the book. But usually I can read like 3 to 4 books in a week. Wow. So it will get read. I'm guaranteeing that. It just didn't happen in the last little while because of my brain doing its I want to break thing. But like I said, I have enjoyed what I've read so far. There's all these books that you get for business because, yes, I have my own business on accident. I ended up helping people and then they paid me and hey, ta-da, you have a job. So mine was an accident. It's a good accident, but it was still an accident. So there was no plan of, okay, we're going to do this, this, and this. Nope, it's none of that. It was, I'm going to help this person and they're going to pay me so that I can eat. That's pretty much it. Probably not the best way to go about that. But I also know myself, and I know that I couldn't end up in cubicle hell because, yeah, it would be hell. I would know what everybody's doing. I would be able to hear everybody's keyboard clacking. Yeah, I'd be the one that everybody worried about.
Well, maybe you started the business the very right way. Maybe you found something that you really good at and you enjoy, and now it's paying you. There's nothing wrong with that. In fact, that's called success.
Yeah, I guess it is. So, without revealing all of your book, do you have any tips for people? Maybe they're already in that startup culture that will help them survive it a bit easier or anything?
Yeah. I mean, the book is full of tips, but let me give you some common things people ask me. If it was to do one thing all over again, what would you do, right? So I think there are two ways of looking at it. I think the first thing that people need to realize, and even the investors have to realize, that this is not just a business. This is like a personal pilgrimage as well for the founder. And they don't talk about that. They have to say, oh, business, and be all very strong to the outside world. So I think on the personal side, I think I would tell the entrepreneurs, even if they're in a successful business right now, that they need not just business help, but they kind of need some personal help. So there's a part of the book that talk about the core dream team. When you go to a venture capitalist and you ask them what the dream team is, they're going to say the sales animal, the best CEO, the CFO, the marketing guru, et cetera, right? And what I'm saying is, yeah, that's all important, but that's not the inner circle. The inner circle is a therapist or a coach, and depending on if you're an athlete, a physical trainer, a nutrition. I mean, things like you are the number one asset. If you're gone, then the business and everybody else's livelihood is not doing well. So I would say that number one thing to do personally is, and it's hard to spend money on that because money is tight, and B, especially when things are going well, I mean, why do you need a coach? And I play a lot of tennis, and if you look at all the top players in the world, top 10, they all have like 5 coaches. And why do they need 5 coaches if they're so good? And so I think that's personally, I would say, to take care of yourself somehow. I didn't do that very well. I didn't learn that until later. I was trying to be scrappy with money and not spend it on this and spend it on that type of thing. And on the business side, I mean, I think there are a lot of, and this could go on forever, a lot of things to remember. And I think people ask me, what are the top reasons startups fail, right? Of course, number one, eventually it's because they run out of money, right? Which is the big problem. But why do they run out of money, right? They run out of money because they timed it. I mean, basically timing is probably number one reason. If you look at companies that have all the money in the world, the best product, the best technology, the best intellectual property, the best teams, and they still crash and burn, you know, it comes down to timing. They were too early or too late. So that's a very tricky one to figure out, but just have to be aware of it. But there's so much going on, you know, how much money you take, who you take it from, how to make sure you test, get the first 10 customers really happy before getting the 100 ones. All those things I've learned the hard way. So it all depends what kind of business you are. Are you a service business, a product business? Are you a solopreneur? I mean, I think the answer would vary for each one of them. But the personal side of it won't vary. I think that one, I agree 100%, no matter what business you're in, that you need to get some help personally. And I think it's a big trend right now, especially in Silicon Valley, where CEOs are required to get coaching and things like that, or work-life balance support, that kind of stuff. So I think those are some of the things. If you read the book, there's a lot of gems on business, but behind it, there's a lot of personal stuff that I think we need to consider.
So when you say that it's different between solopreneurs, entrepreneurs, and
right,
whoever else, what are the differences that you see? Because a lot of people just use the words interchangeably.
Yeah, but a solopreneur is an entrepreneur, but an entrepreneur isn't always a solopreneur in my mind, mm-hmm. right? So for example, I consider you an entrepreneur, but I think the difference that I was referring to is that one is like you're building a company, an entity that's team-based, that is maybe product-driven and has departments and investors. So you're not alone doing all of this, even though you're alone mm-hmm. possibly starting it. But day-to-day, there's like a team side of it, right? And there's a lot of other things to balance in that type of a business than in a solopreneur business, which can be really great too, where it's just you, right? And you might have some support and some service providers supporting you, but you don't have a payroll of 20 people to worry about every month, and you don't have a lot of other things. Like maybe you have investors, but maybe you don't. And there's actually a chapter in the book where one of the people I was working with ended up going both routes. And you could say that the route to solopreneur was a happier one, right? But I'm not suggesting that's for everyone, because that also has a lot of being alone by yourself and not no support. So there's a pros and cons in both. But those are the differences that I see. When I say entrepreneur and startups, I'm kind of like in this product-driven Silicon Valley, let's create something and sell it and scale it and hopefully sell the company to someone else or monetize it that way. That's what I was referring to as part of the differences. So you'd be both a solopreneur and entrepreneur, right?
Yeah, pretty much. I am the jack of all trades.
What do they call a CEO in a startup?
No.
Chief Everything Officer.
Completely true, though.
Yeah, it is true.
Yeah. Have you ever heard of a fractional COO?
Yeah.
I had one of those on my podcast earlier this year. It was the first time I'd heard of it. So
that's a new trend. I've done a lot of interim CEO work where I come in to solve a problem. I have a company from point A to point B. That's a new thing because most people can't, like a fractional COO, there's a big thing on fractional CFOs as well. You need a CFO, but you don't need it all the time, and you probably can't afford it depending on which kind of business you're in. It's a big trend. I've seen fractional CMOs. I've seen a lot of those.
CMOs?
Marketing officers. In fact, I believe there are some sites on the internet where it's like a group of specialists that can sign up to be that fractional person.
Okay. So are there any main points that you wanted to talk about today that I haven't brought up?
I think that when we first talked briefly about this podcast, I believe we were talking about this hybrid of the personal and the business, right? And I know at first you said you were going to talk about the personal side. It'd be good to hear a little bit of your perspective on that too. But I said I'm happy to talk about both. And the reason that is that I believe it's not one or the other. And, you know, even in the introduction of my book, I talk about the fact that if you wanted to read a book about what to do in a startup or like a business plan, strategy, whatever, don't read this book, because there are like 600,000 of those out there. But if you want to uncover like what's going on behind the business decisions and behind the personal ones, I think that's why I think Soul Venture is a very different book. And I know you wanted to talk about the personal side a little bit, and I'm happy to chime in, but my personal stories are all...
Hey, everyone. Thanks for sticking with us. Before we dive into our next topic, I just want to take a quick moment to remind you to like this video, subscribe to our channel, and hit that notification bell. That way, you'll always be the first to know when a new episode drops. And we want to hear from you. What topics are you most excited about? Drop your thoughts in the comments below. Your feedback helps us create content that you love. We've got some exciting stuff coming your way, so don't miss out. Now, let's switch gears and jump into our next discussion.
Sort of about why people do startups and what they go through and what they don't talk about. And they have to really show us a strong front. And that's all that is important. But the reality is the reality, right?
Robin Williams could make the world laugh, but he was still majorly depressed himself. It goes to show that it doesn't matter what's happening out here.
Yeah.
There's stuff happening in the head that we don't know. Even no matter how well we think we know a person.
Think about Anthony Bourdain. He was so successful, or Kate Spade. And there's like a list of people that are actually achieved success. Robin Williams is a great example, actually. Everybody thought he was this happy guy, go-lucky guy, right? And everyone was shocked to hear what he was going through, right? So I think
he made millions laugh. Everybody thought he was happy. They were like, if he could make us laugh, he can't be depressed. That's not how it works.
Yeah, and it's not just depression. I don't think depression, of course I talk about that in the book, but there's like a whole bunch of other things going on here, right? There's ADHD, there's just a lot of things. And some of those, by the way, are actually good for business, right? Mm-hmm. Like some of those conditions can help you work like multitask and be superpower and work late at night. But that can't last forever though, okay? Mm-hmm. And that's what I've seen. I've met a lot of people. I shouldn't say this on a podcast, but I believe that if you're going to go after something crazy, like a big disruptive company or game-changing company and start from scratch, there's probably something going on mentally, right? Okay. Mm-hmm. And I have some third-party information in the book about that's probably a example of insanity. Okay, to try to do all of that and make less money and have no vacation, and then probably 97% of times you will fail. So that whatever was happening mentally or personally for that person, or could be a good thing or could be a bad thing. We don't know until it all plays out, right? A lot of people talk about, you know, the backgrounds of Elon Musk, or if you look at the background of Steve Jobs, who was adopted, and we don't know what's driving them. So those are the kind of things that people don't talk about.
Yeah. My podcast name is Operational Harmony, Balancing Business and Mental Well-being.
Oh, good.
Because
okay.
Being in business for myself, I am mental. Let's not get twisted. Like I am.
Everyone is.
There.
Yeah.
I am out there with the mental health thing. But having a business and helping clients and doing the work even when my body is like, no. Why would I want to do that? Or when my body is in go, 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 go mode, and it's like, you haven't done everything, keep going. And then sometimes I end up having no balance between life and work, because work becomes absolutely everything I have to do because my brain is going to keep moving. So I know that I have made big moves towards trying to get both of those directions to be a little bit closer together so that I'm not completely can't do anything and then can't stop doing everything. And so I work on that. I work on my mental health. I do not think that at any point, even if you are considered normal, that you should just think that you have nothing to work on. As people, we are not perfect. And while we shouldn't be striving to be perfect, we should be striving to be better today than we were yesterday. So we keep improving and keep going. And one of the things you have to improve is how you look at things, how you are in relationships, you know, your mental health and where your mind is at is very important. It's not just whatever, it'll be whatever. No, there are days when I have to force myself to get the hitch in my heel along.
Right.
You know,
it's hard.
And it's not easy. But then there's other days where I'm just like, let's go. I mean, and I have to deal with that. I have to make the choice every single day to do the work because there's nobody else to do it.
Yeah, no, you're right. And, you know, some people say that, oh, even if you work for a company, it's also like 24/7. It is. You know, I know a lot of people, actually, investment bankers. I know a lot of people that are like working like crazy. But the difference that I see between them and the entrepreneurs is that Okay, it's not about the long hours. It's about the fact that their brain, or their, not brain, but their goal is to solve like one piece of the puzzle, like one slice of the pie. Or maybe they're tech, or maybe they're sales, and they're working like crazy. Whereas entrepreneurs are pulled in these crazy directions, right? You have to go from sales to podcast to your accounting, right? It's just like, that I think is a different type of a dimension, you know? But I know a lot of people that are not entrepreneurs and have corporate jobs and are killing themselves, right? But at least they're, but in a different way, I think.
But even then, I think you're still working, so you should still be, again, working on yourself. But not in that way where some people are going, well, I have mental illness and you have a salad and you can't have the avocado touching the egg. Dude, it's my food. Personally, I wouldn't eat an avocado to save anybody's life. But, you know, if somebody wants to have whatever they're eating, leave them alone. That should trigger anybody.
That's true.
Right. Yeah, I read a story yesterday where somebody was triggered over somebody else's salad. And I was, I'm still like, what? That's weird to me. But you can't do that. You can't expect somebody else to go eat in their car because you're upset that they are eating something you don't like, or that something on their plate is touching when you wouldn't do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Everyone's different.
So I'm a firm believer in we all have to work on ourselves. No matter where we are, we need to get better at doing something. Mm. And whether that's communication or doing the work when you don't really feel like doing the work and that kind of thing.
Yeah, just to push yourself sometimes. Mm-hmm. And what are the type of things that you work, you to tell people they should work on for the, on the mental side?
On the mental side, usually for me, the people I'm around, it's, there's a lot of trauma in people's life. So I always recommend that you're at least going to a therapist, work through that stuff. Mm-hmm. I have two of them. I am working through my trauma. I have a whole lot of it. Highly recommend it, because the things that happened to you yesterday, no matter how many yesterdays ago that it was, are keeping you tied down to yesterday. And so in order to get that string or rope to let go, you have to work on those problems. You're going to have the hard days in therapy. And one of my friends always used to tell me to have fun when I was going to my therapist. And he didn't, he doesn't understand therapy, right. Right? But I would be on my way to therapy going, it's not going to be fun. Therapy isn't fun. I mean, I have my days where it's not quite bad because we're not stabbing into some problem I have. But therapy is hard, and it should be. So if you're just glossing over and everything's hunky-dory, you never talk about anything upsetting, then you're not being real with your therapist or yourself.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. What else would you like me to share with you about the book or about anything related to the trenches and of startups?
Without identifying markers, what was your most difficult type of startup?
Oh, I can tell you what type of startup is craziest of all, and also the most, most you can learn from it if you don't go fully bankrupt in it. Okay. It's the number one failure rate in America for a reason. Okay. Because it is so hard. And that's like the wine, not the restaurant, hospitality business. Okay. And there's so many people that do this, right? Oh my God, I got the best recipe from my grandmother and I'm going to create a restaurant. And oh, I got the best idea for a bar. And it's great. And customers are really fickle. They all rush there for the first week and then they never go back. But what's interesting about that business is it's almost like the whole pyramid of the company is upside down, right? Because the most important person is the person, like the server, right? Because that's the face of the customer, is a person that's like, doesn't even care, not doesn't care, but is a transient employee. Maybe they're just there for a few months or the summer. And the most important person is like way in the back, which is sort of the owner, or could be the chef or someone like that, right? Mm-hmm. And there's so many moving parts in that business and so much things you can't control. Food cost, beverage cost, and theft, and marketing, and it rains one day and no one shows up, and or if you're not well, what do you do? So I think that business is probably the hardest business to do. And the ones that get it right are, I mean, hats off. But everyone I talk to that's a successful restaurateur, and I tell them about, oh my God, I went to this incredible place and blah, 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 and you have to go check it out. And his or her answer is always, well, yeah, I'll go check it out, but let's see what happens in 9 months. So I think that is probably the toughest business to start, and also the one that's the most, so many started, right, all the time. Don't you see a restaurant go in, close, and a new one come in, another close, mm-hmm. and then another one comes in, a different concept, and...
Or they have to remodel to make themselves look better.
Yeah, but every time you do a new concept, you probably need remodel anyway. So there's a lot of money that goes into this stuff. It's not like... It's not a solopreneur situation alone.
No, not even a little bit.
Not even alone. So I think that's very hard. And on the business side, I think tech is hard because on the other side of the business, I'm saying, is because it depends what type of tech. If it's like a hardware, it's like so hard to get it right. So if it's software, it's so hard to get it right. And once you get it right, then how do you differentiate yourself from the big boys? And customer acquisition is really hard. Business is hard. I mean, people say, oh, you know, I don't mean to be doomy gloomy about it. I think that I'm just saying that if you can get over the initial hump, then everything is awesome, you know, because mm-hmm. you've done everything. But the initial hump is extremely hard. And as you already know, and it doesn't matter if you're a solopreneur or a restaurateur or a Silicon Valley person. I think that it's getting it started and getting it going and keeping it sustainable where money in is greater than money out, mm-hmm. which is really the true formula of business. To get there takes...
And it's above the level of poverty?
Yeah. And above the level, there you, no, good point. Yeah. Good point.
Because it can be... Expenses are lower than income, but income still not really...
Yeah. Yeah. Enough to sustain, your goals. Mm-hmm. If you can do that and keep growing, then I think you've made it, right? It doesn't mm-hmm. matter what kind of business it is. You know? Yeah. And then I think you've arrived. But that road... is filled with a lot of work.
Mm-hmm. Not the yellow brick road.
Yeah, yeah. But it's worth it for mm-hmm. people that have great ideas and the energy, and they're aligned with an expertise that they're really good at, and they know how to make money at it. I think it's not a bad path if you get all the pieces right.
It makes sense to me that restaurants are one of the harder ones to get going, because I worked in one for just about a year, mm-hmm. a couple weeks short, and that was some work. I was hired as a prep cook, and one of the line cooks come to me, and he was like, what are you doing? And I'm like, chopping this, because I was told to. I don't know.
Right.
And he's like, come on, you're going to be on the line. And I didn't know how to cook. I still really don't, but I knew how to do those recipe items after a while. I was like, if you yell at me... You do know that I'm going to yell back at you, right?
And he was like, "Yeah, a lot of people yell in that business. That's for sure."
And he's like, "No, you won't." And I was like, "Bet, yes, I will. I will completely yell at you. I am Italian and Spanish and a whole bunch of other stuff that yells, and I will yell because I'm not afraid of you." And he didn't believe me until the first time it happened.
Right, I'm sure. Those are tough businesses. Those are tough businesses.
But yeah, working in a kitchen is not easy. So I'm putting one together is probably not easy.
There's one similarity, and I actually talk about this in the book as well. Between there's like friction between company in departments and mm-hmm. companies. There's always a friction between tech department and a sales department, right? Where yes. The tech's like, hey, if I don't make this, then you have nothing to sell. And that sales, mm-hmm. like, if I don't sell anything, you don't get paid.
Or the salesperson is like, oh, but I'm not selling that. I'm selling this thing you don't even have.
Exactly. And then go build it afterwards, right? Same thing happens in hospitality. The kitchen is like, we do all the hard work and you just take the order. And the front of the house, I guess they call it, right?
Yeah.
Is all like, wait a minute. Without us, there's no orders coming for you to cook anything. So there's always this battle going on. And
oh, yeah.
I was just saying, everybody else's job seems easier, is what I think. But
as the line cook who had to stand over a stove in the middle of summer.
Oh my! That's hard work.
That was not okay. Okay, like it was 110 degrees anyway, and then it was like 90 outside, and for some reason it was the same 90 degrees in the building in the kitchen area. I don't understand that at all. So it was hot.
That's truly hard work. Yeah.
It was hard. And then I went and worked for Walmart for 2 years. That didn't go very well either.
many ways for the employees and also for the not owners, because there's so much moving parts going on.
Yeah. And then, but I did learn a lot there. One of the things being, I don't like to cook.
Okay. At least you found out what you did not want to do.
Yes.
That's good information.
So do you have any experiences like that? Where
I've never done online cooking.
Experience. Not expecting to have been online, but like where you've been working somewhere and things gone sideways and not completely your fault?
I mean, all the time things go sideways, right? And there are like basically a lot of expectations on both sides. What we're talking mm-hmm. about is mismatch of expectations, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if you're a line cook or if you're in sales or if you're in tech. Things go sideways most of the time, frankly. And what happens is over time, people realize that there is a mismatch and either they can work through it. I think it's sometimes better not to work through it and find the right match like you did. And so, yeah, it happens in sales. It happens a lot. You know, you didn't hit your quotas or you didn't get the right type of customers or marketing. And then there's a lot of mismatch in expectation setting that happens. And so I think that taking it a step further, up higher, in the end of the day, this is an example of the things that all entrepreneurs have to deal with and have to solve to keep that ship running pretty smoothly, right? And I think, gosh, managing people is the hardest. This is the one reason I would say be a solopreneur is because then you don't have to or worry about employees, right? But then again, if you want to scale a business and do something big, you need employees. So there's, I think HR is one of the toughest pieces of the puzzle of a business. And because in the end of the day, people, there's no business without people, and people are all different. They all have their issues and personalities and make it all work. You know, I have my hats off to HR managers and even entrepreneurs that are like really good at bringing people together in very difficult situations. And I think that's the key, right? So yeah, the people are probably the number one problem, right? In a business.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the number one cause of failure in a business is people.
Yeah, I mean, that's a tough one to solve. But when you get it right, it feels good, you know, for sure. Yeah. I've been in many situations where it's been tough with the people I'm working with. And some situations like so great that you feel so energized. And also it goes up and down, ebbs and flows on how the business is doing and how people are doing. So I've learned over the years to not be too intense about it, even though I was always too intense about it in the beginning. Because you can't really control what you can't control when it comes to people.
And you said you did something for the first time in 97. What was that again?
Yeah, and that was a software where I actually invented like electronically highlighting the internet, like where you would, if you were, it's kind of like Pinterest now, but it was back then, it would be like if you're on the internet, you see a quote or you see a picture, you could highlight them and create little digital libraries and then use them in your writing or in your research, and you would create like automatic footnotes and bibliographies for you. So it was a pretty good idea and very well received early on. But I went through the dot-com bust and I came out alive. I was one of the few that came out alive, but I had to do some major restructuring of the company, like really change teams and outsourced a lot and just to survive the storm. And then, so that was my first one. And then I came out of that and I ended up selling it.
So I'm going to age myself, but in 97, I was still in high school.
A lot of great companies have been started from high school, right?
Yeah. Graduated in 99.
Yeah, I'm feeling older these days. So I think spending 30 years in one way or the other, mine or others, startups, has just given me this perspective. And that's what I'm bringing in this book, Soul Venture.
The 8-year-old, I think, started singing that Staying Alive song.
Yeah.
And me and two other people at the table were like singing along with her. And the 10-year-old goes, oh, you were all alive when that song came out.
Oh my God.
And me and one of them were like, hey, no, we were not.
Right. That's funny.
Your grandma was the only one, your grandma and grandpa were the only ones alive during that time. Thank you very much.
Wow. Well, that song's gone. That has staying power for sure.
Yeah, the little kids know it. They like it. I think it's just because of that one thing, and it's in Shrek, staying alive, staying alive.
I think the kids are, today, I have two kids, mm-hmm. and they like this old song, old music. Not old, I guess, old for them. 70s and 80s. But that was some good times of music, right?
Music from the 50s right on through to music from today. Which is wild to be in a car with me with music going for hours, because you'll get 50s and then it'll be something like Christian music. And then at some point a rap song will come on and then you have some heavy metal, country music's in there somewhere. It just all rattles around. If it's a good song, it's a good song and I like it. I don't like all of anybody's music. I'm not obsessed with anybody. It's not my way.
Well, 50 years from now, we'll be all talking about Taylor Swift and what great music.
50 years from now?
Yeah, because my kids are like in that category, right? All the new music in the last 10 years. Some things have staying power, which is great.
Yeah, the good
ones
do.
Wish all companies had that.
We all hope the bad ones don't. We would all like to stop being Rickrolled.
That's true. That's true. Okay.
I don't even know why they came up with that one, but it has been nice having you on my podcast.
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. Enjoyed our discussions. And I think this topic about what you touched on, the inner world and the business world, I think it needs to be talked about more. And I would hope listeners would check out Soul Venture book. Mm-hmm. I think it's a different take on it all.